I never see a candle that I don't think about the kids' song, This Little Light of Mine. And I hope that that will be something that you remember your whole life. I hope that you will realize that we are to be a light that's set on a hill. I don't remember where I read this, but it was probably 30 years ago. And they made a statement as it were a statement of fact. And I don't know if I've ever seen any research to back it up. But they said that if the night was pitch black, where that you could not just see anything hardly in front of you, if a light were to come on in the distance, that with the human eye you could see that light from 14 miles away. Do you realize that's like almost to Atlanta from here? On a pitch black night. You know why? Because light is powerful. If you doubt that, try to read something if you've got eyes like mine without good light. There are times when you get a set of directions, and I don't know who those people are that can read that little, but I'm thinking, what good are these directions? I didn't really want to read them anyway, and I sure didn't once I saw how little they were. And some of you have been around when I've had to do this. If we maybe were having a meal together somewhere and it was kind of a dark place such as a Provino's, I have to get my phone out. Siri, turn on the flashlight. And I have to hold it over the menu so that I can see what I want to order. And after I'm done, Siri, turn the flashlight off. And I'll stick it back in my pocket and try not to disturb the meal. But light is what we are to be. Today, the title of the message is Knocking Holes in the Darkness. I'll tell you that story at the end of the message today. Don't let me forget. But I want you to just think about that title and how that there's darkness and darkness and darkness, and all of a sudden you see just boom, light, boom, light, boom, light, boom, light. And it's as though there are holes that are just being knocked in, like a person would maybe be in a boxing match and they would punch high, punch low. And they would just be knocking holes there, and all of a sudden the light would begin to come through. I shared a few weeks ago about a man that I heard speak up at Charlie Blackstock's church. This man is big into satellites and beaming the gospel throughout all of Africa. And he said in the early 1900s that Africa was only about, I think he said, 10% Christian. But by 1980, don't hold me to that exact date, but somewhere around 1980, that over half of the continent now claimed to be Christian. Can I tell you that is knocking holes in the darkness? When you look at certain islands in the Caribbean, some of them are steeped in things like voodoo. Others are steeped in things like Catholicism. But yet we'll have missionaries that will go to those islands, and all of a sudden there'll be a church that'll be started, and then another church will be started, and there'll be people being saved from those types of religions, whether it be Catholicism or voodoo. Somebody says, now you ought not call out the Catholics. Well, do I think some Catholics are saved? Yeah, I think some of them are. I don't think the hierarchy is. I don't think the Pope's saved. And I don't say that to hurt anybody. But you can't believe the dogma where that you can go through Mary and you can be saved through Mary. That's not what the Bible teaches. The Bible says there is one mediator between God and man, the man Christ Jesus. They look at Jesus as being a bad guy. Jesus will, you know, he don't really want to pay attention to you. He hadn't got time for you. Oh, but if you'll say enough Hail Marys, you can get his mama to go talk to Jesus for you. That's blasphemy. He is the mediator. And Mary had to be saved just like Jesus saved me. She had to come by the way of the cross. And so when you have people say, they're saved just like we are, then why do we send missionaries to places like Mexico? Why do we send places to send missionaries to places like Spain and certain parts of Europe? It's because they preach a gospel that is not the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so we send missionaries. It does no one any good to believe a falsehood. If you go to a doctor and that doctor diagnoses you and says, you have this cancer and you need to be receiving this type of treatment, and you go, well, I think that guy's lying, and you don't accept the treatment, then your chances of getting better drop dramatically. And so we want to preach the truth. And the truth is this: no matter if you're in America or if you're in Europe or if you're in Australia, if you're in Africa, if you're in the Caribbean, if you're in the Pacific, it does not matter. If you are a human, you are a sinner, and you come to Jesus or you don't get to go to heaven. And so today we are preaching out of Ephesians chapter 5. And I want you to look at chapter 5 with me, and I want us to begin in verse 8. And I want to just give you three things this morning. And as we go through this, I want you to know that, and by the way, your outline is on the back of your bulletin if you've not found it yet. But you can take notes and fill in the blanks, and that will help you. And I hope that you will keep these so that you can go back through it from time to time and go, oh yeah, I remember Brother Tom saying that. And I hope that when you remember it, that it'll be a blessing that you're remembering. So the first thing I want you to notice today is that light renovates its surroundings. Light renovates its surroundings. Look with me at verse 8. For you were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. Walking is a big deal in Ephesians. We're supposed to walk certain ways. We'll see that again here in just a little while. But it says, you were sometimes darkness. Do you notice that it did not say that you were in darkness? It's a truth that you were in darkness. It is a truth also that you were darkness. What do I mean by darkness? That means that you were away from God. That means that you, at one time in your life, you did not know God. Your whole nature was that of being a sinner. And so you were not just in darkness, but you literally were darkness. If you talk to sociologists today, they'll say things like this: well, people have problems because of their environment. That could be partially true. There are people that have problems because of heredity. That could be true. But the main reason that people have problems today is because they're sinners by nature. They make bad decisions. They are unwise. They make decisions based on the darkness that is a part of their nature. And they make decisions based on the darkness in which they live. And because of that, you have people that have a hard time. They say, oh, if we can just educate enough. We spend more on education in this country than any other, probably, nation in the world. When you look at the number of students we have and the amount of money that we spend per capita, we are probably, if not the top, we are certainly probably in the top three. And yet, with all of the education that we've got, we live in darkness. We act like our nature, a dark nature. But he also goes on to say that you are now light. He did not say that you're now living in the light. He said you are now light. So at one point in your life, there was a darkness that inhabited you. It engulfed you. But when you came to Christ, now you're light. You're a candle that is to be set on a hill. And so it says, because you are now light, what do? You walk as children of light. And so when you look at verse 8, keep that truth in mind. You are now light, walk like it. Look at verse 9. For you were sometimes darkness, but now you are light. Walk as children of light, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth. And so, the first thing that it says is that we are to have the fruit of the Spirit in all goodness. The word goodness there has the idea of a behavior that just has kindness in it. And I tell you that Christians ought not walk around with a chip on their shoulder, daring somebody to knock it off. There should be no attitude like that. I know that the times in which we live, where that we've got people politically that are at odds with each other, we probably have not seen a fight like we're about to have over this recent Supreme Court vacancy. It's probably going to get ugly with a capital U. But can I tell you that as a Christian, we've got to be careful how we conduct ourselves during these times? We've got to make sure that we keep our focus on heaven. The Lord sets them up and the Lord takes them down. And I have personal preferences about what I'd like for Him to do, but for the most part, Christians are not a political organization. We are here to be glorifiers of God. We're to make Him shine. We're supposed to be the moon, and we reflect the sun, which is the Lord. And so the brighter He shines, the more we can reflect. And we're supposed to be people that are kind. We're supposed to have goodness. We don't need to start looking for somebody to shoot. Could it come to that? I hope not. I pray not. But I know this, no matter who you come in contact with, there ought to be something good that comes out of your mouth. There ought to be a kindness. Even people that I disagree with vehemently, such as the just died. I had probably zero in common, with her. But can I tell you that I ought to be kind to her family? I ought to pray for her family. And even though we disagree, we're 180 degrees from each other. There ought to be a kindness about other people. I've got kinfolks that we don't see eye to eye, but I still love them at a family reunion. And we ought to have goodness that is just almost oozing out of us. There's a second thing about that fruit of the Spirit. There is a righteousness that is listed in verse 9. What is righteousness? It's the idea that we're committed to obedience. What are we obedient to? Our whims, our feelings? No, we're obedient to the book. We read the Bible, we find out what the Bible says, and we try to do it. Are we 100% successful? Do we bat 1,000? No. People in the Major League Baseball leagues, they bat 300 and they make millions. All right? We're not going to bat 1,000 in our Christian life. But every year your batting average ought to go up. You ought not be content to say, well, I batted 150. You know, you ought not be below the Mendoza line constantly. If you don't know what Mendoza line is, ask somebody in baseball. All right? And so, we ought to live righteous. We live righteous in our obedience to the Lord. But then there's a third thing that it talks about. It talks about truth. And this is a life of honesty and integrity. We ought to be honest in our dealings. We ought to be men and women of integrity. Our yea ought to be yea, our nay ought to be nay. There are some lines that we will not cross. There are some things that we will not do. We have an integrity, and we will not violate the Word of God, nor will we violate the conscience that has been created by the Word of God. And so when I look at verse 8 and 9, and I see that we are light now, and there is the fruit of the Spirit and the three things that he mentions here, verse number 10 tells us one other thing. Proving. The word proving there means to demonstrate. We demonstrate what is acceptable unto the Lord. Now, where was this letter written? It was written to a group of people that were Christians in a place called Ephesus. Ephesus was a pagan city. It was a city that just had pagan altars after pagan altars. The main pagan altar was a temple. It was the temple of Artemis. The temple of Diana also is known. What was taking place at that temple? Well, they would offer sacrifices to pagan gods. They would have places where people could go and they could hire prostitutes, male and female. They were going and they would have the opportunity to get involved with drunken revelries. And what does he say? He said, demonstrate basically what is acceptable to the Lord, not what's acceptable to the city that you're living in. And so our lives are to be demonstrating to the people in our neighborhoods. But can I tell you this, to try to connect it to the missions today? The way that we give to missions demonstrates to missionaries and demonstrates to the people that those missionaries are reaching what our lives are like. When you read through the New Testament, you'll find on a couple of different occasions, the Apostle Paul, and what is he bragging about? He's bragging about the church at Philippi. Now, why is he bragging about that church? He said, because from their poverty, in other words, from their meager resources, they have given to this ministry, the ministry of Paul and his team, they have given to us time and again. In other words, they were willing to give sacrificially so that Paul could leave Philippi and he could go to Thessalonica and he could leave Thessalonica and he could go to Berea and he could be run out of town in Berea and end up in Athens and ultimately he would end up at Corinth. And all because there was a group of people that was helping him constantly in his mission endeavors way back over in the first little city that he visited when he stepped into the area called Macedonia. And so, what do we have? We have got light and it just renovates, makes new, just makes everything shine in verses 8 through 10. But the second thing I want you to see is in verse 11 through 13. Light reproves its neighborhood. What does that mean? That means that wherever light goes, the darkness is dispelled. Look with me at verse 11. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. What was that? Well, they would go to that temple. They'd hire a prostitute. Maybe get drunk. And you would have these people and they would live that lifestyle. And then all of a sudden he says, don't fellowship with those kind of folks. How are you going to be light if you're getting snockered every weekend with friends? How are you going to be light if you're participating in godless things that they participate in? As Christians, we're not in darkness anymore. We're light. And so therefore, we walk in the light. Now, the brighter our light, the bigger the neighborhood. I love the mission footprint of this church. I've heard it said over the years that the sun never sets on the ministry of Corinth Baptist Church. What that means is this. It means that as the sun is moving from the east to the west, I almost inverted that, as it's going from east to west, it's going out into the Pacific, and I realize that it's the earth turning, okay? I understand that. I understand science, a little bit anyway. But as that sun is going this way, we call that the sun going down. And then the next thing you know, we see it coming up, and it's coming out of Europe, coming across Great Britain, coming across the pond, and the next thing you know, it hits the East Coast. And all during that 24-hour cycle, as the sun is here, and the sun is here, and the sun is here, those countries that are being lighted as the sun comes up, quote-unquote, in their countries, we have missionaries that are there. We have over 160 missionaries. It's, matter of fact, it may be 165. But we've got somewhere between 160 and 165. And they are scattered everywhere. This past Wednesday night, we had a man and his wife. They were here, and they are home from Egypt. He gave about a 5-10 minute little update. I had already announced that I was going to preach, or I'd have just let him have the whole service. But he gave an update. He's in Egypt. And he talked about the hundreds of people that had been saved in the last 8 years through the ministry that God has allowed he and his national workers to build. And it was just a blessing to sit and have a meal with them and just let him tell me about what was going on. And then the little time that he told the church different things. I'd never really met him before. He was taken on by you folks before I became the pastor. I went out and had a meal with him, and the next thing you know, now I've got a better connection with someone that's in the Middle East. That's wonderful. And so, our light, it reproves. Now, what does the word reprove mean? It means to convict. It has the idea when you think of somebody that is around you and their life convicts you. You know another word that you could fill in the blank there? They rebuke the way that you live. I would go home from college and I would try to witness to some of my old buddies and I would find out where they would be at, and maybe they'd be over at somebody's house, and I'd get there and they would have nothing but just a whole maybe coffee table of Budweiser. And I'd begin to talk to them and there'd be 4 or 5 of them there, and I'd sit here and they'd say, hey, you want one? Not anymore. I'm in the light. Now, I didn't say I was in the light, but I made sure that they knew that I didn't walk in those ways anymore. I didn't walk the way that they are walking. And can I tell you this? to this day, when there's a need, some of them will call me and say, I need you to pray for me. I need you to help me. If I would have participated, there'd have been no respect. None whatsoever. So, we don't live in the dark. Don't have any fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. Do you know the most fun fellowship that I have? It's fellowship with God's people. I'm just a lot more comfortable there. Now, I've been to some things that the world puts on. Many years ago, Allison is my youngest daughter. She and I were going to have a dad-daughter date. And so somebody said, oh, you need to go to see the Nutcracker. So we got some tickets. And they said, you got to dress up. So, I mean, we put on the dog. I mean, I had a nice suit on, as nice as I could afford. And she had on a nice little dress, and off we go to the Fox Theater. And we're sitting there, and they got us in a place, and I'm telling you, they must not have shut the doors, and it was December, and that wind was blowing through there, and I'm thinking, I'm freezing to death. They didn't speak a word that I understood. The only thing that I remember seeing is a little boy and a bear chasing each other. Can I tell you, to this day, I don't know what the Nutcracker stands for or what the story is. At halftime, which they call intermission, I looked at Allison and I said, you enjoying this? She said, not really. I said, you ready to go? She said, yeah. I said, let's go find us something to eat. And I don't remember if we went to the Varsity or where we went to, but we left. And can I tell you, I've never cared about going to see the Nutcracker again. I just don't fit in there. Now, maybe if somebody explained it to me, you know, I mean, I'm dim when it comes to the fluent culture, right? I readily acknowledge that. And maybe you can explain it, and maybe I would just love it once I understood it. I doubt it, but you can give it a shot. And so, we're not planning on going to see the Nutcracker anymore. Now, I might go see Annie Get Your Gun. I can understand that. But the bottom line is, I like hanging out with God's people better. Tuesday nights, I don't know how many more I'll get to come to, but Tuesday in the last month and a half has worked out great. And I've had a chance on Tuesdays to go over to Bowl Springs Road, over to Providence Club, and play golf with some of the men in the church. And we've actually got three or four of our girls that are going over, playing with their dads. And I think that's fantastic. Only problem is when them girls beat me. But I have thoroughly enjoyed being with God's people on those Tuesdays. That's been great. We had a little birthday party for Isabella last night. And a lot of the folks in the church were that, you know, have munchkins and know Isabella, they came over. And I had a good time just hanging out with God's people. It was fun. And I just enjoy that when I wake up in the morning, I don't wake up with a headache. I'm glad that I don't wake up and I've got guilt on my conscience. And so we don't have any fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but we are to reprove them. So not only are we not to live in the dark, but we live a life that's different. Look with me at verse 7. Be not ye therefore partakers with them. Look with me at verse 10. Demonstrating, proving what is acceptable unto the Lord. In other words, you live a life that proves the things that God accepts. Look with me at verse 13. But all things that are reproved or exposed are made manifest by the light. For whatsoever doeth make manifest is light. Then look with me at verse 18, how that we're supposed to be different. Do not be drunk with wine, wherein is excess. The word excess in our day is something different than it was when the King James was translated. The Greek word for excess is a word in which we would get our word debauchery. And so if you were to read this, and be not drunk with wine, wherein is debauchery. What is it a reference to? It goes right back to that temple of Diana, where the people were going in there and getting soused. And then they're hooking up with people that are the prostitutes. And they had rooms that were available, and people could just live like hell itself if they wanted to. And he's telling these Christians in Ephesus, he said, don't be drunk with wine wherein debauchery is. But he said this, but you be filled with the Spirit. If we look back up at our verse in verse 9, goodness, righteousness, truth. And so, we're not to live a life that is licentious. We are supposed to live a life that is promoting good things. Look at verse 19. I love this. Speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing, making melody in your heart to the Lord. Singing is a big deal at God's house. We ought to sing unto the Lord. No reason why we ought not have a choir that's full. Even after the pandemic's over, you ought to seriously think, I think I might sing. It would be, what a tremendous blessing it would be to see 50 or 60 voices in that choir every single Sunday, faithful as the sun coming up in the morning. Where that commitment would be so great, our church would probably be asked to come and sing in a myriad of different places if we had that type of commitment. And we are told that we're supposed to speak to ourselves in psalms. Did we not do that just a moment ago in Psalm 33? What about hymns? Did we not sing two hymns this morning as a congregation? Spiritual songs. Did we not have two people that sang beautiful solos today? Making melody in our heart. And that's the only place that I can really make it. Some of you can make it publicly. But I like to sing and I like to make melody in my heart. And sometimes I'm just driving down the road, running over in other lanes and everything else. But I'm telling you that there's a way that we are to live. And then he says, you give thanks always, in verse 20, for all things unto God and the Father in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, and then submitting ourselves one to another in the fear of the Lord. The word submitting just simply means that we prefer other people. We give other people the benefit of the doubt. We let them have the best seat. We take the second best seat. We let them have the place in line. We go last if we need to. Those are the type of things that he's talking about. And so there is a life that we are not to live, that in darkness, but then there's a life that we are to live that is different. I'm going to give you a third thing this morning. Light gives resurrection to the dead. Look with me at verse 14. In verse 14, he says, wherefore he saith, awake, thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. When you begin to look at that verse, the first thing, it's almost as though he is talking to maybe just a Christian that's asleep. But it's, to me, whenever I begin to read it slowly, I look at it, and for many verses he's been addressing Christians. But if we are to awake that are sleeping or dead, and we're to arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light, perhaps what he's done in verse 14 is saying, all right, when you walk as light, we'll be able to tell these people about the gospel, And we can say, you need to let the Holy Spirit quicken you because you're a dead man. You're a dead woman. I've been to a lot of funerals in my life. It seemed like that, you know, the life of a preacher, the older he gets, the more cemeteries and funeral homes he hangs out in. And I've seen a lot of dead people in funeral homes, and I've seen them in hospital rooms and seen some in their own homes. I've never seen one that could rise his or herself from the dead. Not one. People that are lost, like we were when we were darkness. You couldn't save yourself. There's no way that you could say, I'm dead, but I'm getting up. Oh, no. You did not have that power. The only one that could rise from the dead by his own power is Jesus Christ. But he says, awake, thou that sleepest. In other words, God will come along and he will quicken you, and if you will respond, you can be saved. You can receive the light. And that's what Mission Sunday is all about. So the first thing we are to do, once awake, then we walk, there's our word again, circumspectly. Look at verse 15. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. What does walk circumspectly mean? It means you walk and you're looking around. Why? Dangers are everywhere. At night, if I go out to my workshop, I walk probably, 100 feet maybe from the house. And I walk up the grass and it's dark. And sometimes I'll say, Siri, turn my flashlight on. Me and Siri are preaching this message today. And I'll shine that until I can get inside. And as I'm walking inside, I'm doing this. Why am I doing that? Because about 3 years ago, I found a snakeskin in there. And I don't need Slim slipping up on me in the dark. I might not can take it. If I see him first, he ain't going to be able to take it. But I want to look, and then I can flip the lights on. And then as I'm moving around, even with the lights on, I still watch. Why? Because there was that 3-foot snakeskin that was hanging on a barrel that's got some pieces of wood sticking in it. And when I saw that, I had little chinchillas running up down my back. As a Christian, you got to be looking for danger. You got to be looking forward. But don't get such tunnel vision, you forget to look to your right. Because Satan will come in and he will flank you. He'll come in, and the next thing you know, you've been broadsided and you've lost your balance. And you're staggering, you're stumbling, and then the next thing you know, he'll hit you from another direction. And then all of a sudden, the fiery darts of the wicked one will come in from the back and pop you in the back of the head. We have people that love me to tell this story. And I got time to tell it. I was in North Carolina. I had taken a group of young people to camp. Camp director says, hey, you want to go golf? Great. So we go golfing. We're on like number 16. I walked off the green, had my putter in hand, put it in the bag, getting ready to get in the cart and go to 17. And all of a sudden, as I dropped that putter into that bag, right in the back of my bald head, bam, I got hit. And my first thought was, well, daggone, a hornet got me. And then I thought, that wasn't a hornet. was a golf ball. Blood's all over my hand, and I'm irritated. I got a towel off my bag. I went down to a little creek that was running down there next to the hole, put it in the cool water and squeezed it and folded it up and put it on my head. And I turned around before I walked down to the creek, and I looked back, and about 200 yards away was this guy, and I said, "What do you say for?" And he got up there and he said, "Hey man, are you okay? I didn't see you." I said, "Well, I turned around and I looked right at you." He said, "Can I do anything for you?" I said, "You better just get away from me." And I'm telling you, I had a headache for 3 days. But out of the blue, back of the head with a golf ball. Can I tell you that I've been hitting the back of the head with the fiery darts of the wicked one before? I've been blindsided by the wicked one. And if you live long enough, you're going to get blindsided by him. But you know what we do? We limit those attacks. How do we do it? Oh, I got him. I got him with my peripheral vision here. I can see him. And just about the time he slips up, you can just look at him and go, mm-mm. I thought this was such a beautiful, beautiful example. A few days ago, I was watching a video, and there was a guy that was riding in one of the cities. And this guy was holding an American flag, and there was another guy that was standing right here that was kind of a big guy. And this guy was in this guy's face, cussing him for everything. And when the guy with the American flag turned his head, this guy on the side that was protesting, he took his fist and he was going to basically sucker punch the guy. And when he did, the big guy reached his hand over and caught it. And then he went, "Don't do that." And all I thought was, is that not a good picture? When Satan's coming in and he's trying to sucker punch you, and you go, mm-mm. You walk circumspectly, not as a fool, but you walk as wise. Missions makes it possible for others to see the light. Makes it possible for others to see the light. How many of you have ever heard of an author named Robert Louis Stevenson? Some of you old folks have, all right? Robert Louis Stevenson was raised in England. When he was a little boy, he was a sickly boy. He didn't really go outside and play with the other kids. He had just a nurse that would basically, she was who taught him like a homeschool kid. She's the one that would take him and just walk gently through the parks. But he did not play like the other boys played because he was a sickly kid. But he had a vivid imagination, and you can understand that if you just read his writings. And he was sitting one evening as the sun was going down. It was getting dark. And he was just sitting there on the second story window, and he was just looking down the street. And the nurse asked him, she said, "Robert, what are you doing?" He said, "I'm watching men knock holes in the darkness." And what was taking place was there were lamps that city workers would go through every evening, and they would light those lamps, pre-electricity days. They would light those lamps, and the whole street would be lit by those lamps. And in the mornings, they would come by and they would extinguish them. And the next night, they would do the same thing. And he made that statement. He said, "I am knocking holes in the darkness." Is that not a vivid picture of missions? When you've got places where the gospel, it's wide open. I really believe this. I believe that the corona pandemic has caused people to think about eternity more than probably they have in a long time. You have people that are scared to go out of their homes. They're scared that if they get this, they're going to die. And they go, and if I die, what's going to happen? Where am I going to go? There was a great prime minister in England named Blackstone. And there was a young man that had come to work there in the government. And ultimately, this young man got elected to be a minister of parliament, an MP. And he went to Blackstone and he said, Mr. Blackstone, he said, I'd like some advice. And he said, okay. He said, I'd like to know how to advance. And Blackstone said, well, what are your goals? And he said, well, I mean, I'm an MP now. And he said, maybe I would like to be, you know, a little higher up. And Blackstone said, well, if you became one of the leaders in the parliament, what would you want next? And he said, well, I'd like to move up more and perhaps I could one day even maybe be prime minister. And Blackstone said, well, that's wonderful. I'll not be prime minister, you know, for life. He said, there'll be more besides me and, you know, and that's good. But after you're prime minister, what then? He said, well, I guess I'd maybe, after being prime minister, I'd probably retire. And he said, what then? He said, well, maybe my family and I would move to the country. And Blackstone said, and what then? And the young man was getting frustrated. He was like, I guess I would die. And Blackstone said, and what then? So what do you do? As a Christian, people that have this fear, and they say, how are you handling it? Great. You say, are you scared? No, I'm not. If somebody wants a hug, I'll hug you with the criteria that I've always used. You want to shake hands? I'll shake your hands. You want to fist bump? I'll fist bump. Elbow? Yeah, we'll do that. Or if you want me to, I'll stay 6 feet from you. But I want to minister to you the same way that Martin Luther tried to minister during the Black Plague. And if I get something and I die, it's okay. Heaven's my home. But I want to make sure that our church knows that people are watching us. We're light. How bright is that light? Now, it can be brighter by expanding our mission program. It can be brighter by witnessing to your neighbor across the street. It can be brighter by the people that you talk to at work. It can be brighter by the students that you go to school with. It may be on a Zoom right now, or it may be maybe in October it's going to maybe be in person. But you are light. Walk as children of light. And if you want to see the holes that are being knocked in the darkness, take a walk down this hallway, the missions hallway. We dedicated that 1 year ago. And we've got little acrylic holders that are changed. The letters that are inside, they're changed constantly. Because every week we get another 15 or 20 of these things. And AML is constantly churning those things out. And there's new things all the time. Why? Because that is what you and I give to in our mission program every month. And it's not just that we need to be light here in Loganville. We need to be light in Europe and in Russia and in China and in the Caribbean. We need to be light everywhere. And we can't go everywhere. I don't want to go everywhere. Somebody said, you go to the mission field all the time. No, I don't. I don't like getting on airplanes and going places. Now, will I go? Yeah. Johnny Daniels is trying to get me to come to Puerto Rico in January. That'd be nice in January. But he's wanting me to come down there for a special meeting in January. I may go. I haven't decided yet. But I have people say, hey, why don't you come to, you know, why don't you come to Egypt? Yeah. Why don't I send some money to Egypt? You say, would you go on a mission trip to Egypt? Yeah, I would if the Lord led me. I really would. And I say that, you know, all that about sending money instead of me going in jest, because if it were the will of God, that would be the safest place in the world for me to be. The will of God is where you and I ought to live. And our mission giving is dependent upon you. I can give so much, but we as a church can make it happen. Now let me pat you on the back a minute. You know, for the last 6+ months, everything's been goofy. We have been reaching our budget for the most part every month. If one month we don't, it seems like it's made up the next month. Through last month, in our general fund, we were $600 over budget for the year. Our mission giving, not general fund, but our mission giving, and this is what I'm patting you on the back about, we were $6,000 over budget thus far. You know what that means? That means there's more missionaries that we can take on. There's more people that we can send out and we can let them knock a hole in the darkness. Today, you were asked to pick a faith promise card up in the foyer. If you have not picked yours up, please do so on the way out. And this week, I want you to ask the Lord, what would He have you give for faith promise for the next year? My prayer is that you will do at least as much as you have done this year. I was talking to Brother Perry. By the way, it's good to have him back, isn't it? Brother Perry has been basically taking care of Miss Barbara now literally for a half a year. And he's back today. He's our treasurer. And I was telling him, I said, Brother Perry, I said, what I'm hoping is that the committees that we had this past year will simply say, let's just do what we did in 20 because it's pretty much been a useless year. And he said, I like that idea. And so I'm going to talk to a few more people and we'll see about being able to just keep the same budget for the next year and all of that. But the bottom line is this. You guys have done a good job with missions. I cannot thank you enough for that. And I want you to pray about what God would have you to do. And this coming year, why don't we see if we can up our mission families? And let's just do the best we can so that when there's a spot on our globe and we go, we don't have a footprint right there in that country. Let's see if we can find one. And we start supporting a missionary that's there. And I would like for the Lord to see our mission program growing and expanding every year until Jesus comes. Now that could be this afternoon, and that'd be okay. If He comes this afternoon, you don't have to worry about giving next year. All right? But the bottom line is this. We're different. We're supposed to be different. We are light. We're no longer darkness. We are light now. If you're a Christian, you are to be different. You're supposed to walk in that light. You're supposed to walk circumspectly. And people are to look at you and go, they got something I don't have. And I hope that that's the way that I will live. And I hope that's the way that you will live. Let's let our light be so great that it could be said about you and me that we knocked holes in the darkness. Let's stand together.